The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRB Radio, its management, or staff. Talk show, Money Talk with Steve Bovay. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Bovay. With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Bovay.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Money Talk Show. This is AM 790, your station for talking business, but you already knew that. Did you know that the Dow Jones closed the day down 65 points? Closed at 20,663. We're going to talk about what happened for the first quarter. It's a good time to assess things, not necessarily to react. 3 months is a pretty short period of time, but I think you'll find some interesting and enlightening things in that report. The NASDAQ down slightly for the day, closing at 59.11. S&P 500 at 23.60. Small stocks down up slightly today, while the larger companies are on the on the slight slide, I guess I would say. A 25 years on the air, 25 years as a certified financial planner professional, and 38 years of licensed professional work in the financial arena. So if you have a question or a concern, we will not try to get you to make an appointment with anybody. I promise. We've never done that ever, not once. But our numbers are 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. It's never been a, in general, not just our show, but in general, never been a better opportunity, really, you know, to get an objective opinion from someone who you're safe from. Sorry to say that, but some salespeople in the financial business are very aggressive. You know, we aren't at all, just the opposite by our nature. But, you know, we've seen the other side of that coin, you know, so... if you have a question or a call, we'd be happy to help you out. And if we don't know the answer, we'll be happy to look it up for you. That does happen on occasion as well. Again, the markets were pretty mixed today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down just slightly. But it was a very interesting quarter. Things are playing out. In the financial business, we try to stay away from actually predicting anything. But you can't help but work on what you think will happen, what you think should happen based on... based on past history, really, you know. I've been talking about emerging markets for a year or so now on the program, recommending you all take a look at that category. It had performed very poorly for quite some time, and that's because interest rates were dropping in the mature world, meaning the countries that are very much older and experienced, like USA and Europe, they're in a different part of the cycle. The emerging markets tend to perform well when rates are rising here in our country. There's a few theories on that. One is that it kind of scares the money overseas. Some people think that stocks can't gain while interest rates are rising. That is not true. Anyone tells you that doesn't know history. But they really probably meant to say, and they're kind of right, is that rising interest rates is not the best environment. and that's true. The last time we had rising rates here in the good old USA was June of 2004 to June of 2006. During that 24 months, U.S. had nothing but rising interest rates. I think it was about 17 ticks or something. It's crazy. They usually go too fast. Let's leave it at that. Probably will again. Who knows, right? But during that two-year period, and that was that long ago, 10 years ago, while rates were rising here in the U.S., for that two-year period, the S&P 500 gained about 10% during that two-year period. The Europe markets for stocks, gained about 40%. And the emerging markets of the world, believe it or not, gained about 70% in 2 years. So my theory was that this should repeat itself. Not everything does, but this is so fundamental. Rising rates here means maybe... either dollars move overseas or they go overseas when they would have come here. It's a volume thing, I think, But year-to-date, the emerging markets, depending on how you measure them, are up about 12 to 14%, actually, take a look at one of these new low-cost ETFs that you can all take a look at. EEM is a symbol for this. It's a, I think it's a BlackRock iShares. Yeah, iShares Emerging Markets ETF. Dividend yield about 2%, pretty low. Up 10 to 12% so far this year, when the good old USA is up 4%. I find it interesting that you you don't hear about it. This should be, it was a little bit of coverage on it on the Business News last week. One of my clients told me they'd seen it. I think for the next 2 years, you're going to want to have a piece of this. If you don't already, you might want to take a look at things and get another opinion maybe. When I started my career a long time ago, I remember being told that 3/4 of the stocks in the world were American companies. And 38 years later, 3/4 of the stocks in the world are not American companies. It's the exact opposite. So what should your international versus U.S. stock holdings look like? Well, we always went with the 75-25 theory because that's what the world looked like. Well, the world has changed. And you don't hear an awful lot about this, you know. I think about it often. I have adopted a very global mindset about investment myself. I think that's the greatest safety is owning everything or a little bit of everything, you know. Even if you get a guaranteed investment somewhere other than a U.S. Treasury, even that can, on occasion, you know, be questionable with the amount of debt we have. But even a truly pure guaranteed investment, like a guaranteed product from an insurance company that has the word guaranteed stamped all over it, I don't buy it. I think there's always something that can happen that can go wrong. So I think it's dangerous. When you think something's completely guaranteed and nothing can go wrong, you'll overfund it. You'll put more in there than you should. Nothing is that, folks. Now, that might not be true. There may be some things that really are truly guaranteed, but I think it's dangerous today to think that. Once you get into that arena of seeking out a guaranteed return, I've got a few clients that have reached that point in their life. They're older now. They've got enough money saved up. I talked to one recently, a very smart woman that I've known for a very long time. And she said, "Stephen, would you think I was crazy if I was happy with 2% net, if I could get it guaranteed right now?" I said, "Absolutely not." Because she knew that at that rate of return and her needs for the money, she wouldn't. There's no way she would run out of money during her retirement. Keep in mind, folks, if you live to be 95, and I think you can, my dad's 84, and I don't doubt that for 1 minute. But I'm here to tell you that the people who sell financial products don't want to hear what I'm about to say. And that is, yes, you may live longer than ever before, but I think that your income needs, if you live into your 90s, are going to be rather small. And I think your needs are rather simple at that age. So, yes, we are living longer, but we're still aging. You know, so 90 isn't the new 60, meaning 90's 90. That's, you know, physically and all that stuff. So, I don't think that you, many people put off their retirement very long in life. I've had a few widow clients tell me this story because they didn't feel like they had enough money saved. But someone convinced them that they needed, you know, $60,000 a year until they die. Now, I don't necessarily believe that. I think my wife and I would need something like that with no debt to retire comfortably. But if I live to be 85 or so, I think I'll need much less than that. I mean, of course, in an inflation-adjusted basis for you other planners out there. But if you give it some thought, well, if you retire at 65 and you handle your money so it's kind of running down when you hit into your 80s, what do you need more than a home paid for and some savings in your 80s? You know, not much more than that. Most of us, you know. If you've got a special needs child or a situation where you know, something happened late in life and you had a lot of debt, you know, you can cover that with life insurance. To not leave a mess behind should something like that happen. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Of course, it's the end of the first quarter, and as I shared with you already, the leading markets for stocks is not the U.S. It's actually the last performing market, and that's all you're hearing about every day is how much the U.S. stock market is up, right? Well, it's up 4% so far this year. An ETF I'm looking at that invests in Europe is up 7%, almost double. And emerging markets up 10 to 14, double again. So this year is playing out, and it's rare and very nice for me to see it happening this way because it's exactly the way we thought it would happen. I actually thought it would happen last year, so no one can get it on the dot, right? Anyway, if you haven't got any emerging markets in your account, It's a good way to get income, too. I own an emerging markets ETF myself, as well as my clients. I have it, too. And it pays about a 5.5% dividend, and it's up up 15% year-to-date without the dividend. So it's on track to, you know, have a nice 20% year, and we're only in March. The sweet spot is over, folks. U.S. stocks tend to grow nicely in October, November, December, January, February, and March. Don't expect a lot more, especially U.S. stocks. If we don't get a normal, needed, healthy correction in those prices by the end of the year, I think you'll see the sweet spot will play out again, where we'll have a flat values from now through the fall, really. Many years ago, when people were more into trading, you know, an old trader phrase was sell in May and go away, because stocks just didn't seem to do much from June through October, and that's still the case till today. And I believe that that's got a lot to do with the recent stock market performance. As a matter of fact, the first quarter on average in the sweet spot is 4%. That's exactly what the market did. I don't see any extra there because of the president. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. And this is a little bit different twist on things. I know that you, if you're a boater at all, especially in open water, ocean, you know, that kind of thing, there are multiple things going on under the boat, if you know what I mean, if you're experienced. In other words, there are large ocean currents that bring in big, fat swells, you know. It's like the big, fat guy you knew when you were young. He was bigger than everybody else, but he was gentle, you know. And they don't rock you. They're the ones that make you seasick if you sit in them. But they don't pound your boat, and they don't usually defer your trip. It's the wind-driven smaller waves that do that. And they can be coming from a different direction than the undercurrent, you know, wakes that are coming in from the open ocean due to storms that have passed by, anything like that. And in the financial world, when you listen to the news, what you're going to hear is some nice people that are journalists, most of them, who are doing their best to explain why something is happening. The problem is they're inexperienced boaters, and all they see is the chop on the surface. Not one of them is talking about this emerging markets phenomenon this year. We've been talking about it for a year before it even happened. The sweet spot is very, very reliable, and so is the pattern of emerging markets doing well when rates are rising here in the U.S. So if you haven't had a good look at or review of things of late, I think you best get to it. There's some major changes coming about. Traffic, as we speak. Brought to you by Dunkin' this is the Money Talk Show Dunkin' on AM 790. I'm Steve Beauvais, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790. This is your station for talking business. We're talking a little bit about the markets, what's happened so far this year. If you have something more interesting, I'd love to hear from you at 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. I'm just being silly. I'd like to have a little fun when you've been done something for as long as I have. I think it's very nice, actually, to be comfortable enough at some point in a 40-year career, right, to have a little fun with it. It's a heavy topic, I always believe that heavy topics delivered in a heavy way just melt people's brains. So we try to have a little bit of levity here on the Money Talk Show. We talked about stocks a little bit. We're going to get to bonds in a little while. When interest rates rise, you've heard many times that bonds get hurt, and that can be true. Take a look at, if you're nerdy enough, VBLTX. Just happened to pick it because it's a well-known fund. Vanguard Long-Term Bond Fund, very long-term securities in there. Dividend yield of 3%. Down quite a bit here in the last 6 months. This is what I was talking about last year as well, is that when rates finally started to move up here in the U.S., that long bonds, 30-year governments, 20-year corporates are no-nos. Yet I run into accounts that still have them in them. Floating rate bonds and short duration bonds should be the best choices when rates are rising. Take a quick look at a few of those that we like. And there are many good ones. That's a good thing about it. You don't have to be a genius at picking them. If you understand what your investment needs are and you're doing it on your own, most of these products today out there, these ETFs and things, are low-cost, commission-free, very safe consumer item. But last 6 months, Vanguard Long-Term Bond Index Fund, is down about 15% in total investment return. And this is a very safe investment. At that rate, it's going to be down 25% or so at the end of the year. Now, that's more than I anticipated, but not good. A lot of people who maybe bought these things long ago and they did very well for a while. Well, when interest rates are dropping, that's like sailing a sailing vessel with the wind at the perfect spot. Now, the reason I said the perfect spot is because I'm not a sailor and I don't know what the perfect spot is. I know it's not in my face. I know that. But it's probably not directly behind me. It might be off the corner. I'm not sure. I'm sure one of you sailors would know better. When interest rates are falling, that's a backwind for bonds. So they performed brilliantly. But right now, about 10% or so, where the other categories I mentioned are both slightly positive, or only down, the longer term commitment a bond has with a fixed rate, that's the one that's in danger when rates rise, right? Because the rate is fixed and it can't keep up. I have a wonderful bond making 5%. I love it. Rates rise, and now the new ones are paying 6.5. Do I still love mine? It's paying 5. No, I'd like the other one better, right? I'd like 6 better than 5. Why not? So interest rates have a lot to do with the price of long-term bonds, and I've had quite a few very enjoyable conversations in my office because, believe it or not, and some of you may be surprised, but there's some not. Many of the people that we've met, even through this radio program, that are clients to this day, don't really listen to the show on a regular basis. They don't have a natural interest in it, you know. They had an interest in it because they were looking for someone, and once they secure that relationship, they're not so quite, and I've had a few laugh about it with me, and I said, I get it, it's okay. Now, for example, when I'm on vacation, I will read financial news and financial books because I actually have a natural interest in it. Had I not chosen the financial business and went to a different field, art might have been one of them, but I still would have had an interest in this stuff. I always did, even as a very, very young person. So some people do, some people don't. But it's a good way to assess somebody's viewpoints from afar. You're not in their office, so you don't have to tolerate any bad behavior. So it's a good way to kind of feel people out before you take the chance of spending your time or your money to go sit down and talk with them. I've had quite a few very rewarding experiences where people have come into the office. Of course, lately it happens more often than ever. When people say they've been listening to us and waiting to become clients for over 10 years, 15 years sometimes. And, of course, they retire, and maybe the 401k plan is their main problem they have to deal with. And that's when they look up the folks they've been listening to for a few decades, But there's a lot of great programming on the air today, not just on our station, but all around, So tune in here and there if you're interested. Listen to people. You got to learn who to tune out, and that's in every field, right? People who have an agenda to sell something, they're usually much more salesman-y than we are here. They use gimmicks, in their advertising. Look out for that stuff, Don't do your business with anybody who uses cliches. If they're gonna have your back, tell them to go to the playground. Okay, cliches are one of the signs of the salesman, the real salespeople, and more dangerously, the inexperienced salespeople. They love cliches. When I hear somebody using cliches who's supposed to be a financial leader, I think to myself, you can't come up with anything new. you can't come up with your own material. Best off just kind of stay in the middle. But I've found that the companies that I've encountered in my career who turned out to be a problem, if you look back on it, there were signs of it in their marketing. They exaggerate. They take a lot of liberty with the English language and how they express things. It's very salesmanship, So if you're hearing that kind of stuff, be careful about that. We've had a few times actually with clients who listen all the time, and we said, we never give out our phone number. And they said, oh, come on, we hear you do it. So we don't give out the number to the office. It's just to the studio. So if you want to call us so we can help you or take a question and either get you an answer or look it up and get it next week, I'd be fine too. That's what we do, and we try to keep it right here on the radio program. We do not offer ever, and we have never, and we're not planning on doing that, ever offer anyone on the show here or, a meeting with us or anything like that. Many of you have done that, as you know, but we leave that to you and so the show can stay pure. And I can focus my time, the hour or two before this program, on what I think your needs are. What are you hearing? What might be concerning you? Are you missing the emerging markets rally? that I've been screaming about for a year and over a year now. Again, things don't always repeat, but they usually do. And the last time interest rates rose in the U.S., the best performing stocks in the world were emerging markets, and of course, year to date as well. And just for laughs and giggles, as they say, one of the better performing emerging markets so far this year is Poland. Now, there's a lot of countries over there. It's a big bundle. And they tend to be, if you buy into a traditional emerging markets, you know, small, middle-size equity fund that doesn't pay a dividend, that's very aggressive and should be for older people only. The emerging markets fund that I own personally in my own personal account has a dividend of 5%. So whatever it does, I'm getting a dividend of 5%. Now, it's up strongly this year in addition to the dividend, which I'm very happy about. But, you know, even if it dropped, I still get the dividend. Doesn't matter. And when you have dividends from stocks and bonds, when the share price fluctuates, if the value of your account goes down, your dividend does not drop. People are astonished. I have seen eyeballs pop out in my office when people say, "Are you kidding me? How do I not know that?" Meaning if you have a bond or a stock and you're collecting dividends from it, if the secondary market value of that bond at Coca-Cola was to drop, it doesn't affect your dividend. Only profitability of the company will affect the dividend on a stock anyway. You know, bonds, it's other stuff involved as well. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. This is Steve Bove. I'm a certified financial planner professional for 25 years. 25 years behind the microphone and 38 years licensed financial advisor type person. Always enjoyed doing something that would have a big impact on people's lives. I enjoy helping people with their money because it's a very challenging and intimidating topic. And I've been told I have a kind of a unique, simple style of explaining things that people like. We'll leave that to those that I serve, you know. If you're having trouble understanding the people you're talking to, and I've had trouble, I have listened to other financial people who I have trouble understanding. How's that with 38 years of experience? So some people have a very extravagant style. If that matches yours, fine. If not, not fine, you know. So try to seek out someone who has a similar style to yourself, and I think you'll find that'll be a better match. Talking about insurance a little bit, we started last Friday. Life insurance in general, I would stick to term insurance almost always. There is a place for permanent insurance, I think. I don't think it's an accumulation vehicle, except for cases like if you are about my age. I've seen a few of these, and you got the house paid off, the kids are grown, maybe a couple, both work, and they both have peak earnings in their 50s, which is usually when your income peaks in your life, is from 50 to 65, you know. And they can stash quite a bit of money at that point, for their savings and things of that nature. If you reach that point in your life where you can do that, you know, good for you, congratulations. There's a lot of opportunity in the tax law that you want to take a look at. When you tax defer everything, when you're, tax deferral, keep in mind, is a temporary advantage, right? Be like punch deferral. You're going to punch me now, or I'll punch you later. Oh, I'd rather be punched later, actually, than now, but never being punched at all is even better, right? So tax deferral, IRAs, things of that nature. The more I think about it, I'm not that excited about it. I think it's a good idea to have a mixed balance of things in retirement. I personally will retire with 50 years of experience in the financial planning field. And I will clearly have, I have it now, big pile of money for retirement in an IRA, tax deductible. Nice pile of money in a Roth IRA, not deductible, not taxable either. And another pile of money in a regular old brokerage account that my wife and I own together for our retirement. And that's just regular investments. You know, if I get a 1099 to pay tax on the dividends there, except for my municipal bonds. But other ones I have, you know, conservative bond funds and things that pay 4%, 5% dividends. Those are all taxable. Most of them are taxable at a full rate for me. If you're in a different tax bracket, check out Topic 409 on the IRS website. 409 for those of you my age, like the cleaner. Remember 409 spray cleaner? cleaned anything. It's the actual publication, IRS, and it talks about if you get dividends or capital gains, special kind of dividends from American stocks, how you can actually pay no tax at all on those. There's an incentive there in the tax law to encourage you and I to take a risk and invest in our fellow American. And so it's called a domestic dividend exclusion rule. And also long-term capital gains can be taxed at zero. It could be happening now and you don't know it. Because most, even accountants today use a software program and it catches it all. So some things get put in and you're not even aware of it. But anyway, there are for couples with an adjusted gross income of under $65,000 and singles under about $50,000, I think it was, or $45,000, there are some opportunities there to invest and get dividends. Not IRA money. You have to use cash money. A good way to look, good move here would be maybe money that's in a CD. Now, understanding there may be quite a big difference in risk, but you're looking to produce some sort of income. Hopefully with a tax advantage. Can you imagine getting 6% and it's tax-free? If you're married to file a joint tax return and your income together is under $65,000, and many of you listening meet that category, see someone about this. If you have some cash sitting around, there's some really good opportunities where you can invest. 3% municipal bonds, tax-free. 5 or 6% preferred stocks, if you're in the right tax bracket, could be tax-free as well, or taxed at a very, very low rate. And these are rates, you know, that we haven't heard since Hector was a pup, my mother would say, a long time ago, right? 4, 5, 6%. I own an investment called a closed-end high-yield fund, and Nathan does too. It pays 7.7% dividend. The share price is all over the place. Ignore it. Collect your dividends. Investing is like farming in that, you know, no one crop is so predictable that you can rely on it only. And the prices fluctuate from time to time, just like your investments do in a diversified portfolio. So if you have many different crops each year, you can harvest the crop that's the most advantageous to you and running your farm, right? And for profitability and sustainability and all those things. Well, a good diversified portfolio is the same way in that I actually have, keep in mind now, 38 years I've been licensed. I have clients that have been with me 30 years, had a lot of stocks along the way, and never, ever, 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 ever bought anything and then sold it at a loss. Not one time. And that's the case way more often than not. The losses that I've witnessed in the stock arena have been customer-driven, panic reaction. You know, if you're terrified at the thought of a bear, don't go bear hunting. You know, if you're that afraid of the stock market that you're going to react that extremely to, you should stay away from it probably, because something that you're intending to help you is much more likely to hurt you than anything else. If you tend to be reactive, either get some help with that if you have a good advisor who will meet with you when you're nervous and afraid. And it's important to, I think, if you ever are nervous and afraid, and that's understandable, of course, that you talk with someone who doesn't appear so nervous and afraid. That's how I get my clients through the tough times. I make sure that I'm energetic, probably worked out that morning, ran on a treadmill, lifted weights, and make sure that I'm ready to encourage them to be positive. You must be an optimist. If you're a pessimist in the stock market, you will get killed. If that's your nature, if people that know you say that you're a pessimist, stay out of the stock market. Because just the opposite is required. Now, if you're a pessimistic by nature, that's a good thing. People tend to be very careful when they're that way. And pessimism is very good when planning, right? When planning anything in your life, whether it be your retirement or a vacation or a start a business, you don't want to have the plan require everything to go perfectly for the plan to work, because life doesn't work that way, right? So you have to expect the downsides and the negatives in most things that we deal with. So when you're planning your finances, you should be a bit skeptical. But if you're making the investment decisions and you're a pessimist, I think you're going to be very prone to buying high, selling low, buying high, selling low. It's a very, very unfortunate pattern that pretty much everything else in our life, if it's on sale, we want to buy it. But when stocks are on sale, people want to sell them. They don't want to buy them. And that's been probably the biggest challenge in my career, guiding people through it, which is the main reason why my client accounts are with what's called limited discretion, which means they don't make those decisions. They talk to me about the macro portfolio, what their needs are, whether they're happy or not, that sort of thing. But we don't get involved in panic reacting over one item. You know, to something that happened on the news that day. Every now and then, you know, it could be a good thing to react to something like that. But my experience has been over 4 decades almost that almost always that will prove to be a mistake. This year so far, year to date, all you are hearing about is the S&P 500, which is a beautiful investment. I own it. Clients all own some of it. But I will tell you, I have less U.S. stocks in my account than I can ever remember in the past. I have about an even mix between overseas stocks and U.S. But keep in mind, the overseas stocks represent about 75% of the stock market today. So you could actually have 25% of your stock portion in U.S. and 75% overseas. I'm not quite there yet because even though the other markets are bigger now, I don't think they're better. So I like a nice 50-50 mix of stocks and bonds, international and U.S. It's one of the great traps also. I've seen people look at a 401k statement, for example, and they see the U.S. one did great for 3 years and the foreign didn't do well, so they put it all in the U.S. right at the top, right? Then it inverts on them. The U.S. has its off year, and then they look back 3 years, they missed it again. And if you ever body surfed on the beach and when you're trying to learn how to body surf, if you don't get it quite right, the wave goes right past you, well, that's how markets run too. And it's very hard for even professionals to catch them. The term I've heard is try to catch a falling knife. Very difficult to do. So market timing is more times than not dangerous, and reacting is the biggest problem, I think, for most people. Money management is very important. Emotional management is more important, I think, when it comes to decisions about your money. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Insurance, wrapping up a little bit of insurance tonight as I kidded in the beginning of the program, probably my least favorite topic. Insurance is an expense, but insurance is a good thing, you know. You have to have a big chunk of that when your kids are young and you've got debts. And it's what would a young family do without life insurance in a disaster? So it's all good. I just don't like paying for it. A very smart insurance guy once said, you don't hate insurance, Steve. You hate paying for it. I said, oh, boy, you're smart. He's exactly right. I definitely hate paying for it, which is why when we get to the automobile homeowners insurance category, you'll find it's much better for you if you have adequate savings to really take a look at all your deductibles. I take as much risk on myself as I possibly can. I drive older cars. That's my style. I don't like putting money into automobiles. Bad enough I got boats, right? Need both. But these things are all assets that depreciate, and so you want to make sure they're insured, mostly for liability in case you hurt someone or do a lot of damage, you know, in an accident. And most of you on your car insurance right now have about $100,000 of limited liability per person. Now think about that for a moment. Think of what year we're in right now, right? 2017. If you get into an accident and you're at fault, even if you're not at fault, you could just slide on the ice and go through a red light. Not really at fault, you know, but you're still going to be liable. $100,000, that could be 2 surgeries. That could be a month in the hospital. What if you hit someone who's a high earner? So you need $1 million of liability insurance if you have anything to lose, meaning a house, 401k, savings accounts, et cetera, et cetera. Call up your company that you have your homeowner's insurance with and ask them to tell you about a personal umbrella policy. I have had one for 20 years, longer than that. It's about $300 a year per million. So I think $1 million's fine for most people. Once in a while, and it happened this week, I met with someone who, when I was gathering information about them to do some work with them, I discovered they had the umbrella policy, and I smiled and said to her, well, I always knew you were pretty, I got the impression you were pretty savvy when I met you. Not too many people have this policy. And she said to me, I bought it 10 years ago when you said it on the air. I said, well, good for you. Think about it. If you have a household income of, you know, a couple today, you know, $50,000 to $100,000, you know, it's $25 a month. You have to have it. It's the catastrophic loss that can happen. And those of you who are not aware, if you put your foot on the brake in February and the brakes work fine and you're not drinking and driving, you're not speeding, you hit the brake and you go right through the red light on the ice and you hit me and cripple me, you're in trouble. You don't have to be criminally wrong to be held liable for the financial part of it, folks. So please, this weekend, this has been my number one plead for over a decade now, take out your automobile policy. Look at what it says. If you don't have an umbrella policy, then that's all you have. Look at what it says per person. most likely says 100,000 per person, 300,000 per accident, which means if you were to hurt two or three people in one car, then it could be as high as 300,000, but no more than 100,000 on any one person. I'm telling you, folks, that's crazy to be driving around with that. And when a shop insurance agent pointed out to me 20 years ago, I jumped on the bandwagon immediately. I suggest you do too as well. Very often, my customers have told me when they spoke with their agents about a personal umbrella policy, they were able to raise their deductibles on their auto and homeowners, and it paid for it, kind of a trade-off, and put the coverage where it really belongs. I don't think you really need to insure your lawnmower or the fender on your car. You should have some savings to replace that if that happens. The real risk of automobile insurance
is not the car. It's time for Dunkin' Donuts Regional Traffic, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts.
This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. And America's ice. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790. I hope you had a good week. Hope you're healthy first. Wealthy second, of course. Health is everything, folks. Only because I have the microphone and you've all been so good to me for so long. If you haven't exercised in a while, it's tough to get there, but once you get there, it's really wonderful. I ran a treadmill today, uphill, carrying light weights. I carry four-pound weights. I run uphill on a treadmill about a half a mile. And what it does, how good I feel tonight. Anyway, just a little friendly sharing with you all out there. This is the Money Talk Show, and we're supposed to be talking about money. Here's another favorite one of mine. Okay, I'm retired, Steve, and I'm retired at 65 years old, let's say. Should I collect my Social Security now? I need some supplement to my pension. Do I take Social Security now, or do I use some of my money that I have, my investments? Because I heard, Steve, that if you don't take that Social Security benefit, the longer you wait, it goes up at a really good rate, almost 8%. You know, and that's kind of like, you know, someone's going to say it's guaranteed, but don't use the word guaranteed with a federal program when you're talking to me, please. Anyway, so a lot of people have different opinion on this, and it can be different person to person, but I'm pretty thick-headed on this one. I will take my Social Security benefit as soon as I can take it without an offset, which means if you're not at your full retirement age and you're going to earn above, say, $15,000 a year, then you're going to get it offset. Then I would defer it and use your assets. But if you're going to fully retire at 65 or 62 and you're not going to work, I say take the Social Security benefit, preserve the assets, and here's why. This is the argument you don't hear about. Let's say, for example, that's you or I right now, and we decide to use our IRA money, 401k money, take out, you know, $2,000 a month and not take my Social Security, which would be about the same. And if I let it go three, four, five more years, when I do collect my Social Security benefit, it'll really increase. It could increase 30% or so while you're waiting. Well, I don't have a lot of faith in these type of programs. It doesn't matter who runs them. It's just the nature of the beast, you know. So here's my look at it. If I use my own money, so I'm depleting my resources, right? I'm using up my money in order to wait for my Social Security benefit. What happens when you go to apply for the benefit and you hear that the system's in trouble, it's bankrupt, our leaders have robbed it and raided it once again, and now it's not going to be anything that you were promised. It's going to have to be modified or it's all going to be lost, right? This is how these things happen. So I very, again, thick-headed about this one. I'll take this argument on any time with anybody. No way in the world am I using my money and to defer my Social Security benefit. Because if you take the Social Security benefit and it falters, you've got your money, right? Right. If you use your money and it falters, you don't have your money anymore. Or at least you've got a big chunk of it you've used up to supplement by putting it off and deferring. I've got one great client I can't get through to on this one. He's a smart guy, too. But he just sees it a little bit differently. He's a risk taker by nature. Depends on where you are, I guess, in the cycle, you know. But if it appeals to you, I would suggest you apply this thinking to when you should collect Social Security. I've heard all the arguments before. I've never heard that one. And that's my own personal insight into it. I don't think you're going to find anyone with anywhere near my level of credentials who would tell you, if you're their client, that they have complete faith in the Social Security system. As a matter of fact, when Nathan and I are planning 10 years before people's retirement, which we do a lot of, whenever they give us the Social Security benefit, when we present, they give us their reports and we put it in their plan, you know. And when we're presenting it back to them at the first meeting, planning meeting, oftentimes I wait, he and I kind of look at each other because we know what's going on, you know. And we'll just wait for the client to say, wait a minute, this is my Social Security benefit? No, they're going to be more than that. And we just smile and say, yes, we shaved them by 20%. And they say, you what? Shave, like, you know, like a person shaves, I might shave my beard, you know. Because we are afraid that the numbers you're being told from Social Security, I wouldn't say a high likelihood, but it's not guaranteed like we're told. I understand how the system works and how easy it is to plunder it. You could not get your Social Security benefit or get a reduction in it when you retire. Nothing to do with the system being bankrupt. It could just be that somebody in the office decided you have too much other money. And so you're not going to get this, even though you paid into it. Social Security is not an entitlement plan program. People, welfare is. That's handout money. Social Security is not handout money. No more than a pension is handout money. Handout money's okay. We need to have some of that in this world. There are people that need that, so I'm okay with that. But let's not call Social Security an entitlement program. It clearly is not. You paid, you know, 7 to 9% of your income into it for 30 years, and I had to pay double that, 14% being self-employed. So we put a lot into it, but don't rely on it too much. Include it in your plans, folks, but don't assume for a moment that nothing can go wrong with Social Security. That's my advice for the weekend. Hope you have a good, healthy, safe one. I tune in, of course, Monday night with Don Soa right here on AM 790, your station. I see you lurking in bookstores.